Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today we're visiting with Mr. Ted Clark, a businessman, entrepreneur, and inventor with more than 40 years of experience as a senior executive in both public and private equity-owned specialty chemical companies. He now consults with business managers on acquisitions and growth strategies using private equity capital. And his book is Shipping Clerk to CEO, The Power of Curiosity, Will, and Self-Directed Learning. And Mr. Clark, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And you're certainly more than welcome, and thanks for your time. So for starters, why should vision, strategy, and tactics be used at any level to drive success? Let's start there.
Yeah, sure. As I wrote the book, I was trying to really get back as to, you know, how I was able to, you know, move so quickly up the ladder without a college education. And I found I did a pattern of things, which in retrospect was, you know, in each job I would try to develop my own vision for, you know, what I could do to either improve the job, make the job more interesting for me. You know, in the early days it was more about me than the company, I think. And then once I had that sort of vision, then I would try to sort of set an objective where, you know, I would know when I'd accomplished it. And then I'd develop, you know, sort of strategies and tactics to get there. And I sometimes call it, like, you know, looking for a vacuum, you know, vacuum in a process, a vacuum in a, you know, in a product or a service. And then trying to fill that vacuum, you know, and developing an approach to doing that, and you know, getting it done so that I can move on to the next opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for the good lead off there, and that sets us up for the next question. And I'd be curious, how do people determine what drives them? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think that's the core of everything, right? I mean, you know, and it's pretty individual. You know, why are you doing what you're doing, right? I mean, it may be as simple as, in my case, originally it was I wanted to buy, you know, a pair of skis and boots because I was a big skier at the time, and I just was looking for a job. But you know, beyond that, I had had a tragedy in my life where my older brother had passed away early, and I think somewhere I was trying to find meaning in my life, and I started to find it through work, actually. And then I get to one job and I try to, you know, figure out how to get to the next one and so forth. And so there's kind of an underlying driver in my case that sort of pushed me to get out of my comfort zone. I think that's, you know, it's one of the things that I talk about in the book is you really need to understand, you know, what, not so much where you want to get to ultimately, but, you know, what's driving you right now? You know, what's moving you to do what you're doing? And you know, how far do you want to get, and how do you get there, right? So it helps center your mind if you know why you why you want to do things. And then once you know the whys, you can figure out, you know, you can organize the tactics and the approaches that you want to use to get to the next level.
Yeah, that why is so important, and thanks for hitting on some important points right there. Now, how important are mentors and mentoring in a successful life, both personally and professionally?
Yeah, very, I think. In my case, you know, they were probably the most important aspects of my rise, right? Because, you know, I virtually knew nothing when I got to this company. I managed to get a job as a shipping clerk. Knew nothing about business, knew nothing about management, really nothing about leadership. And what I learned over the next, you know, 20 years, I learned from people in the company. So it was essentially an apprentice program for me. And you know, the book in the end is really, you know, kind of a love letter back to those mentors that, you know, were willing to take the time to, you know, answer my questions, you know, give guidance, you know, provide support when needed. And then, you know, the other side of that is I think I earned a lot of that by, you know, showing up each day, being ready, being present, you know, demonstrating that I'd be willing to go above and beyond and so forth. So it's sort of a symbiotic relationship between, you know, mentor and mentee that's really important. And the other thing too is, you know, that I think is really important is these sort of not formal mentors, but, you know, people that you can go and talk to in different parts of the company or different parts of an organization. If you want to learn about accounting, you know, you need to go find somebody who knows something about accounting. If you want to learn about technology, you need to find somebody who knows something about technology, and trying to earn their trust and have the ability where you can go and ask pretty basic questions to learn about things is, you know, personally, I think it's critical for anyone, you know, wherever you enter the workforce. You enter, you know, as a shipping clerk, you enter as a, you know, as a college graduate. You know, developing a network of mentoring relationships with other people is I think the key, you know.
Yes, for sure on that, and really do appreciate the insight and info shared so far. Now, why is trust important to success, and how is it given and earned?
Yeah, I think, I think personally, you know, for me, it was the biggest eye opener, right? You know, if you can create a trusting relationship with someone, and you do that through these mentoring, you know, this kind of mentoring relationships and other networking that you can do, you know, it does help you to rise a lot quicker, right? Because you're a little bit less controlling. It's a little bit less about how you want people to do things. It's more about what your vision is, you know, what your objectives are. And then really trusting with, you know, the people that are working for you to develop the strategies and tactics to get to those. You know, no one likes to be prescripted to, you know, no one likes to be told what to do. And you know, the other great part about trust is that it does help foster creativity, right? So if you're saying to somebody, look at, you know, this might be the way that I would do it, but, you know, if you have a better way or a different way, you know, either do it or let's discuss it if you want to talk about it first. But, you know, kind of building that trust creates, you know, more gratification for the leader and for the person that you're sort of granting your trust, right? You know, what I found is the higher I got, you know, the less decisions I ended up making, right? Because I was almost pushing down the decision making as close to the customer as possible by sort of building on a shared vision of what we were trying to accomplish, but letting people actually, you know, make those choices. And, you know, people make choices that you might not make sometimes. And as a leader, you're going to have to, you know, accept that. And, you know, occasionally you have breaches of trust, which is a whole nother discussion. But, I found that if you give trust, you get trust, and, you know, for the majority of the time, it's going to really, really pay off. And you're going to have some times where, you know, that trust isn't rewarded, and you're going to have to make some choices with regard to those individuals.
Great feedback on the trust factor. Really do appreciate that. And I think listeners would find that most helpful. Today, we're speaking with Mr. Ted Clark, the author of Shipping Clerk to CEO, The Power of Curiosity, Will, and Self-Directed Learning, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, tell us, Mr. Clark, how important are relationships and networks in long-term success? Touch on that factor.
Yeah, I think they're really important. And I could probably quote a study I like to quote by G.H. Smart, which is, you know, the big, human resources company. And they looked at about 2,500 high performing CEOs to see what made them, what made them successful. And they had this little discovery that about 8% of those CEOs had not gone to college, right? And then they started to look at that and say, well, why, you know, what made them successful? And the key for those individuals, or the common theme of those individuals, was that they tended to work in their industries longer. They tended to work for the same company longer. And then the second thing, they tended to overperform in each job that they had. And then the third thing, they tended to attract other leaders onto their management teams that were, you know, you know, sometimes much more, you know, broadly educated than they were, to build out these teams. And, you know, I think in the end, the key is, building a team that's better than you are, and then trusting that team to do what needs to be done. And the studies sort of bear that out, right? So it's really sort of the core understanding of the, you know, I like to think about running a business as knowing it on a biological level, right? Starting with, you know, what's your core competence? What's the value you're creating, and why are you creating it? And then how do you use that to, you know, accelerate getting to whatever vision that you have for the business?
Also, tell us, why does servant leadership create value over other leadership styles?
Yeah, I think in the end, servant leadership is, you know, the other way I think about it is sort of leading from the front, right? It's, you know, it's where you're supporting and building up your team. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, if I'm working with somebody and they ask me a question, I'm making a point to get back to them within a certain period of time, right? So I want to make sure they have everything they need to be successful, right? And I think that's what servant leadership is all about. It's really sort of, you know, not dictating, not blaming and all that kind of stuff. It's really about sort of having that kind of relationship with the people that you're working for, that they know that they can come to you if they need something, right? And the only way that they'll do that is if they know you'll respond, right? So you know you'll be there to help them, and I've found that that's been really, really effective over my career anyways, in terms of developing people, you know, getting people to take risks. You know, if people are willing to take more risk if they feel like their boss is going to support that risk taking, so that if it doesn't work out exactly right, it's not, you know, not a blame game. It's like, okay, we decided this together. You know, I supported you, I backed your play, and it didn't work out. So, okay, that's life. Let's move on to the next opportunity. So, if you want to really be successful in business, you know, you have to build a relationship. It's not a command. These command and control structures of the past are sort of gone away now, right? You really need to have a situation where, you know, people know that in the end, you're going to make the decision, you're going to be accountable. But as part of the team, they're going to have a great opportunity to participate and learn and grow. And in the end, you know, it's, you know, something goes wrong, the boss takes the hit. If everything goes well, you know, the whole team gets the credit. That's where I come from on this, is that it's a much more rewarding way to run a business than sort of the old command and control type structures.
And that's some great information on servant leadership, and thanks for that. And definitely agree with your feedback in that regard. Now, why is selling important both internally and externally in a high performance organization? Touch on that.
Yeah, I think it's more important than ever, right? Because of, the way that markets change now and technology changes. 15, 20 years ago, you know, you'd set a process in place, and that process might work well for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. You develop a new product, that product might work well in the market for, you know, 5 or 10 or even 15 years. Take the electronics industry, you know, every year something's changing, right? So, processes are changing rapidly with technology. And the only way that works is if you can be really agile and make decisions quickly. So, for me, it's, I'm sort of somebody who, you know, process is important, but, it's the ability to always adapt those processes to the current, you know, the current situation. I mean, you look right now with what's happened with the supply chain globally, you know, those companies that are, that have been agile and have been able to adapt have done well. And those that haven't have really, really had a difficult time. So, you know, to me, it's just part of the period that we live in, that, you know, agility and being able to change and being adaptable is just, you know, it's just sort of almost a foundational principle now, rather than, you know, something that somebody does on the sides. And selling is where that happens, right? You know, the ability to influence people. I was trained in something called need satisfaction selling, where you spend a lot of time listening to what your constituents need or want, and then you adapt and build a value proposition, and provide that to the customer in a way that it meets his needs, right? So, you know, selling in my mind is the way that you influence change, right? You need to listen, you need to understand, and then you need to sort of recommend how you want that change to work, and you need to get the whole team to agree to that, right? So, you know, the whole deal about selling eventually is you got to close. And in this context, you know, closing means that, you know, you've decided what you're going to do with the change and everybody agrees. And once you have that shared vision, it's a lot easier to, you know, to adapt and change.
Well, with 40 years plus experience, I'm sure you have seen a lot and have learned a lot along the way, and really do appreciate your insight and information shared here today. One last question as we conclude. Why is it important to find out what your learning style is? Talk to us about that as we do wrap things up today.
Yeah. I think people learn in different ways, right? So, you know, a lot of people learn by, you know, much better by doing. And, you know, our country's changed a lot over the last, you know, 40 years. You know, when I was in high school, you know, you had, you know, wood shop, you know, electronics, you know, all of these sort of trades kind of education. And those were primarily trained through by, you know, by doing, right? So kind of an apprentice approach versus a classroom approach. And, you know, in my case in particular, I mean, I learned much quicker by doing. I learn a lot faster by deciding what I want to learn about and then just go learning about that specific subject. And, about a third of the adult working population has a, you know, college degree, which means that two thirds do not, right? And, you know, my opinion and what I really talk about a lot these days is, you know, there's a lot of leadership in that two thirds that don't go to college. And there's a lot of talent in the two thirds that don't go to college. And we don't really talk enough about them and how to develop them and the successes that many of them have. You know, as an example, 30% of the newly opened businesses in the United States are opened by people that don't have a college degree. So lots of entrepreneurial activity, you know, in that area. So I think it's an underdeveloped area from a public policy point of view. And I think you start to see that changing now. You know, a lot of articles that I've seen lately in the Wall Street Journal and others from very big companies now saying, you know, we've overinflated college degrees for starting jobs. We should be giving people more opportunity without college degrees and so forth.
Well, Mr. Clark, it certainly has been great to have had you with us. And of course, you are the author of Shipping Clerk to CEO, The Power of Curiosity, Will, and Self-Directed Learning. Where can listeners not only get more information on your book, but on yourself as well?
Sure. Well, you can look for me at www.tedclarkauthor.com. And then for Shipping Clerk to CEO, probably the easiest is to just type that in your Amazon account, and the book will pop up. But the book is available at most of the bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Google Books, Apple Books, etc. So it's readily available out there under Shipping Clerk to CEO. Just type that in and it should pop right up.
Hey, that sounds easy enough. And as always, we'll include these links within the show notes of this broadcast to aid the audience. Again, Mr. Clark, all the best. Thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Anytime. We've been speaking with Mr. Ted Clark, the author of Shipping Clerk to CEO, The Power of Curiosity, Will, and Self-Directed Learning. And for all the details, visit tedclarkauthor.com or shippingclerktoceo.com. EnterpriseRadio.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.